The Guardian.
Football Weekly Extra.
Today, take that, moist and liquid envy. There's only one club in Blackburn. Rovers beating Reds amid widening belief that Hodgson not only can't pronounce ours, but doesn't know them from his elbow. Elsewhere, Arsenal and City draw, Spurs tumble, Man United roll on, and Chelsea huff and puff, but Wolves blow their house down. We round up what they're calling the best midweek round so far this year. There's transfer talk, and the SPL's plan to switch to a 10-team league. So that's expanding by 8, is it? There's Post 2 and Milkmen in Action, ahoy. We preview a big weekend in the FA Cup. All of that in today's Football Weekly Extra. On board today, Barry Glendenning.
Good morning, James.
Your swan song, Barry, in a very real sense.
Yeah, I'm not going to be here again.
For 3 weeks. 3 weeks, Barry, three.
Yeah, I have to go on holidays. I've accumulated so much holiday. I work so hard that I've accumulated so much holiday. I now have to take 3 weeks off or I will lose it. I don't know yet.
Right.
There was talk of, what's the place down, Cornwall.
Ah, yes.
But it's not really a Cornwall time of year.
I would say not. Your last holidays proved ever so entertaining, so we look forward to hearing about those. In the meantime, Sean Ingle here.
Hello.
You're looking ever so well, Sean.
Thank you. Listeners will be amazed to hear that you had three goes doing extra.
Yeah, I did.
Three takes.
That was a good one, actually, Sean.
Extra.
Ooh, look at him. Competition. Meanwhile, sitting alone and rejected in the corner, it's Michael Cox of ZonalMarking.net. Happy New Year, Michael.
And thank you, same to you.
Hey.
And a happy birthday, because
what?
Yesterday, or no, was it Monday?
Yesterday.
The first birthday of ZonalMarking.net.
Really?
It was indeed, yeah.
Wow. I've got so many questions, three questions for you later from listeners.
I'll look forward to them.
Yeah. Tell us an amazing story about, you know, how you started out from a shoebox, but now you're... Is there some kind of amazing rags-to-riches story?
Sadly not, no.
All right, then. How many hits do you get?
About 15,000 visitors a day, which is
oof.
Nice.
I'm one.
Every day?
Not every day.
No, fair enough.
Not every day.
Only when he needs to feign knowledge.
Yep, only when I need to feign knowledge. You could have that as your strap line.
But that's
you
not the time, isn't knowledge. It?
Woohoo! Oh, it's all kicking off here in Football Weekly Extra. There we go. All right. You're back in your box. Sean Ingle. Liverpool, Wednesday night, beaten 3-1 at Ewood Park. Well done, the poster. Who was it who said he should rename it Bollywood Park? You know, with the Indian owners and the... Yeah, I enjoyed that. Anyway, 3-1 defeat for Liverpool. Well done, Blackburn, first of all, with almost all their senior players missing.
They were excellent.
This game. Yeah.
I only saw highlights of the game, but the highlights I saw, Blackburn were absolutely outstanding, and it's always tempting to focus on the supposedly big team that fails, but Blackburn definitely deserve credit. Steve Keane got a right tune out of them, and... apparently he's about to get a new longer contract, so it'll
what,
be interesting.
Beyond the end of the season?
But that's what I heard anyway. Mm, yeah.
Okay.
So
yeah, we have to say so far so goodish for Blackburn, but it's a very different picture for Liverpool. Yet another nadir in a season full of them. A lot of talk this morning, Thursday morning, about the departure being imminent for Roy Hodgson there from Anfield. Let's dial up our man beside the Mersey, Andy Hunter, to hear the latest. Andy, hello. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you too.
Thank you, Andy. Thank you. Busy times ahead, methinks, for Liverpool-based scribes.
Oh, yes, as usual. There never is a dull moment. But, yeah, I think it's a matter of when Roy Hodgson goes now, after last night's defeat at Blackburn. The structure of the story is all out there, in that the owners are already looking for a replacement, and it's just a question of when they can find the right man and install him, and or do they, you know, how long do they prolong Hodgson's torture, and or more to the point, Liverpool fans.
Andy, the obvious question is, who's it likely to be, and is there any chance they'll make a sort of a stopgap appointment and maybe bring in Kenny Dalglish?
I don't think they want to make a stopgap appointment. I think ideally they would wait until the summer and bring in a younger coach with fresh ideas, who's going to be there for the long term, which is really what the club should have done last summer. But, you know, obviously we're a bit restricted in that by the whole takeover saga. They're very reluctant to appoint an interim manager because, you know, obviously there's the clamour for Kenny Dalglish, but what I could see happening is that it would bring the club together. It would keep, you know, give the whole place a lift, which it is in desperate need of. I just think the club needs a fresh start, and whether he's to do well or if the slide was to continue, I think it would be very difficult to take the job back off Kenny Dalglish in the summer, which would then give them another problem. You know, but you can't keep going on with the way results are at the moment, and attendances are falling, and it's just dire.
Andy, have things reached such a sad state of affairs at Liverpool that there could be large swaths of their fans who are actively hoping they'll lose against United at the weekend in the Cup because it would hasten Hodgson's departure?
Yes, I think so. I think there's a sense that this season is a write-off anyway, and the sooner Hodgson goes, the better. And if it was to be at the expense of going out of the Cup as well, if that's what it took, then I wouldn't say every Liverpool fan would go for that. And I think it would be very difficult for any to admit that they would be content with any defeat against Manchester United. But, you know, I think there is a desperation and a clamour for Hodgson to go now.
Andy, you mentioned that they have been talking to people with a view perhaps to a move later on. Who actually are the names that have been contacted by Liverpool, or is it Sammy Lee dusting off his headset again?
I wouldn't rule out Sammy Lee at all. But then, I think they need to make a permanent appointment, a young manager. You know, Didier Deschamps was interviewed last summer, interviewed very well, but for some reason, you know, maybe from his point of view, wanting to remain in France and to, you know, continue his work at Marseille, he didn't get the job. I mean, the decision to give let's be clear about this, the decision to give the job to Roy Hodgson was made by Christian Perslow, the former managing director, with the backing of Martin Broughton, the temporary chairman, whose job, as you know, as their main aim at Liverpool was to sell the club, which they successfully achieved. But, you know, they were not football people. And, you know, I think they went for, as Martin Broughton said at Roy Hodgson's inaugural press conference, they went for the man who would steady the ship. And I think it was to steady the ship during the sales process, not for the goods of the club long term.
All right. Andy, just sum it up for us then with a quick prediction, because it is Thursday morning and who knows what might have happened by the time this pod gets out. Come Monday, post the FA Cup third round game with Man United, who will be in charge of Liverpool?
No one.
No one?
I think Hodgson will go, and the process of finding a hopefully permanent replacement, but I would guess temporary replacement, will be underway.
Well, it does look like the jig is up for Hodgson. Even Mark Brighty Bright coming out in tweet in full force on the tweets yesterday, Michael.
Yeah, he was getting a lot of abuse, wasn't he?
Mark Bright?
He was, yeah.
Yeah, it's quite troubling to see that, isn't it?
No one likes
to see Brighty getting abuse.
It was troubling to see Dan Walker get the abuse.
Right.
Because he tweeted a similar thing last week.
Let's talk about Mark Brighty getting abuse, though. Somehow that gives me a warmer feeling.
What's your view on Mark Brighty?
I was just curious to see him coming out and speaking about Liverpool in those terms. And he was certainly caught some flack from the Twittosphere, as I believe.
What happened?
What did he say? He tweeted
something along the lines of a Liverpool supporter replied to him, and Mark Bright hit back saying something like, "You're living in the past" or something.
Yeah.
And it was just a swarm of abuse, about 200 tweets slagging him off and questioning all kind of things.
I didn't write all of them. Can I just stress that? That went all from me. Anyway, there you go. Situation not much clearer then at Liverpool. And you may know more, listeners, by the time this gets to you than we know. Now, Michael, one tweet asking, why is it? I mean, is there any one tactical thing about Hodgson's Liverpool which really leaps out at you as glaringly wrong? And why is it they can't win away games?
Well, I was intrigued yesterday because he commented after the game that he thought his side were too offensive, which is completely at odds with the situation in every other game I've seen Liverpool play in so far this season. And it's the main problem the fans have with them. Well, actually, maybe on the back of last night, the results is more of a problem. But the main criticism of Hodgson has been that they've been too defensive. They've sat back too much. And so for him to lose 3-1 in a game where Liverpool defended absolutely appallingly and to come out and say they were too offensive just maybe suggests that he's kind of lost the overall strategy. He doesn't have any kind of cohesive brand of football that he's looking to take the club forward.
All right. I think it was quite interesting looking at the chalkboards after the Wolves game, comparing Pepe Reina's distribution against Wolves this season and last season. Last season there were lots of short rollouts to fullbacks. This season it was just long hoiks forward to Fernando Torres, and I think that's it shows how Liverpool are playing quite differently under Hodgson.
Greg Ruffley will be in the pod on Monday, taking issue with Steven Gerrard and his role as captain, saying why doesn't he shout more at his fellow players when they are looking so uninterested in resurrecting the season. We'll have more from Greg, as I say, on Monday, by which time there'll be no doubt much more to say about this subject. But in the meantime, Liverpool not the only team in crisis. There's also Chelsea, a 1-0 defeat at Wolves. Brilliant for Wolves. Now we've got that out of the way, let's riff on Chelsea's pain. Barry.
Well, I'm just looking here at a photograph in today's sports section of the Guardian, page 5. It's at the aftermath of the game, John Terry walking off the pitch, and he has his finger poking Mick McCarthy in the chest, which I think is a battle too far for Mr. Terry. He's picking the wrong fight there. But Chelsea were, again, dismal. They've got their form at the moment is basically relegation form, less than a point a game over the last 10 league games. And if Hodgson is destined to get the bullet, then it's difficult to see how Ancelotti could avoid it too.
Well, because he's just won the double last season, whereas Hodgson hasn't. That would be the big difference there. Well, I was curious with this game whether it was anything like the Birmingham match, in which they were actually quite unlucky, peppered the opposition goal with shots, etc., and still ran out losers. But Michael, you were pointing out that he had 3 shots on target despite being behind for 87 minutes and no shots on target in the last half hour. What's happened?
I was going to give you that stat myself, actually.
No, job done.
You've come late to this, Michael.
Yeah,
that's the problem of you.
Chelsea, I mean, everyone says first 10 games of the season, they only dropped 5 points. They outscored their opponents, off the top of my head, something like 27 goals to 5. Yeah. And then the next 10 games, they get outscored 15 goals to 9 and only pick up however many points. It was 10, I think.
Well, there are a couple of things.
Why?
There?
No, I'm asking the guru over here. I'm asking the guru why, because it's the same. They got the players back, Essien's back, Lampard's back. What happened, Michael? What?
I'm not sure it's a tactical thing.
Oh,
I mean, there's obviously the fallout from the Ray Wilkins thing. There seems to be only two.
What fallout from Ray Wilkins thing?
Well, people are taking it just that they may have dipped because Ray Wilkins has left, but he obviously left because of something.
Right.
And surely that might have caused...
They're both symptoms of another hidden...
Quite possibly. I don't know.
The quality of the podcast will dip over the next 3 weeks, and it will obviously be linked to my absence. I don't think you need to be a guru to figure out what's gone wrong with Chelsea. We have this conversation every week.
All right.
Their defence is ageing and creaky and leaky, and the goals have dried up. It's as simple as that.
They were only 2 months younger 2 months ago, and yet they were top of the league 5 points clear.
The defeat to Sunderland at Stamford Bridge in late November has turned out to be a turning point, both, as Barry says, the way teams play against Chelsea has changed completely, because Bruce set out with a very attacking system, 2 strikers, they pressured Chelsea really high up the pitch. And McCarthy, after the game yesterday, was very proud of the fact that he played 4-4-2, he hadn't gone with 5 men in the middle, and he had set out to attack Chelsea. So I think it has changed. I think teams are less scared of them, and Chelsea are dealing with almost a different threat. Before, at the start of the season, it seemed that teams were just sitting back and hoping to lose 1-0 or 2-0, whereas now Chelsea are really having to do the defensive work, and they're struggling to get up the other end.
In the meantime, the most expensive game in Premier League history, Arsenal-Man City.
How much did Sean bet on it?
No, no, the ticket prices, actually, Michael.
Yeah, it was because of the VAT rise. Yeah. I think the most expensive normal ticket, by which they mean not a corporate seat where you get your meal and your beer thrown in at half time.
Right, not literally one hopes, but anyway.
No,
yeah,
was just over the £100 mark.
Oof. And what would the cheapest ticket be? Or didn't they have such things?
I think that was around 50. I'm not sure.
At least they got their money's worth, eh? The happy punters at the Emirates.
Well, not quite. I think Barry's the man for this. I saw him.
Barry?
In the minute by minute, he wasn't too pleased about.
Well, I thought Manchester City's approach to the game was a total disgrace. For the richest club in the world to pitch up for a game with ticket prices that expensive, not even try to score, is an embarrassment. I got crucified for stating that in the minute by minute by Manchester City fans whose bleats that, you know, it's points on the board that count and it's the manager's job to get results. Sort of ring hollow for me. I mean, that's not why those people started going to watch football in the first place. And if they're reduced to waving their pom-poms at the sight of a team containing so many talented players just, you know, putting in an obdurate defensive display and making no attempt to score, then I just think it's sad. But if they're happy with it, that's their lookout, you know.
I mean, it's a bit like buying a 132-inch plasma screen, a gold-plated PlayStation, a massive subwoofer system, and then using it to play Pong. You know, you kind of think City could do so much more. But when
it's a bit like buying yourself a gold-plated Nissan Almera Estate, says Barney Roney on the tweet.
That's true. Yeah. City, when they've played against the top five in the league since Mancini took over, 7 out of the 11 games have finished with 0-1 goals. It's not a surprise. This is what Mancini does against good sides.
Yeah. All right. A couple of other posts. Big Banana Feet says City get too much criticism for playing a solidly defensive game, especially against Arsenal. There are many skills in football. How about some appreciation of the work of companies Zabaleta and Hart? Jay Spaceman says, I don't really understand how anyone could actually have watched the match last night and considered our defensive game to be, inverted commas, solid. I'd say that was a fair reading because I wasn't that impressed with City.
No, the first half they didn't defend well at all. Arsenal should have probably been 3-0 up. They hit the post twice. Van Persie should have... Wilshere should have squared to Van Persie in the first minute. And my problem was the same as Barry's. I don't have a problem with defensive football. I don't have a problem with teams coming to get a draw. But City just showed absolutely no intention of scoring a goal. And if they had conceded, they were very close to conceding, I can't believe that they would have been able to transform their game, get up the pitch and score.
We should perhaps give a nod to Arsenal's defence. It's their second clean sheet in a row, which I haven't done for a while. And it's quite interesting to point out that Arsenal have not lost the game when Johan Dura has played for them in the Premier League since November 2008. So that's played 21,
stat.
118, drawn 3, lost 0. Which begs the question, why doesn't Wenger play him more often?
I think he was very careful about bringing him back from injury too soon. He was keen to rotate him, but I think you're right. I thought Koscielny was a little bit dodgy last night. Every time Tevez got the ball, Tevez would drop into space. Koscielny would come out and get beaten. Giroud's good because I think Vermaelen and Koscielny are both similar in that they like coming up to the pitch. They like coming to meet players. Giroud's much more of a calming influence. He likes to sit back. He doesn't go into unnecessary challenges. So I think the combination of him and either Koscielny or Vermaelen is probably a winner for Arsenal.
Oh, the jury no longer out for Arsenal many ways there at the back. Bingo the Dog says, I am an Arsenal fan, and after yesterday's results, my first reaction was to assume that United just can't lose the title as they already are too far ahead. But then I checked the fixtures list, and I saw that while Arsenal have already played Chelsea and City twice, with only Spurs and United left from the top five, United still have to play Arsenal, City, Spurs and Chelsea twice. Now that's five potential dangerous games for them. So maybe. Plus, he adds, we'll be out of Europe as soon as early March. So, Arsenal.
Is having Chelsea twice left a problem, or is that a good
it
thing,
might be.
Considering their run?
It might be. I mean, if you fall apart that rapidly, I still maintain you can maybe pick yourselves back up again that rapidly. Crazy game. Football.
One other thing about City, the caution they exercised last night cost them their place in the Champions League this season, and there's every chance it could cost them the title this season. How long are supporters going to be prepared to put up with watching that kind of crap while simultaneously missing out on bubbles? And if they do win the league this season, their place in the Roll of Honour will already be marked by a giant asterisk, you know, for financial doping, a lottery win, they fell out backwards into petrodollars. And now there's going to be another asterisk denoting the extreme caution and cowardice they exercise.
Well, you said this before, I replied, everyone buys the title.
Yeah, well, not everyone does it, say, the way Blackburn did or the way City are trying to do, or Chelsea did when they won it first, you know, just by winning the lotto, basically, and just spend. There's nothing particularly wrong with buying the title like that, you know. If your club wins or gets that kind of windfall, good luck to them.
It's quite nice to have that kind of Uncle Scrooge Bucks type character in the whole kind of wacky races, he said, mixing his cartoon metaphors, a constellation that is the Premier League.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, it is just an ongoing soap opera like EastEnders or Corrie, and you know, everyone sort of takes it too seriously. But you have all these different characters, and they all make it very interesting.
Yeah. Different strokes for different folks, eh? That's it for part one. Man United, rolling on. A bit of discussion about that. Loan players, relegation candidates, Julier, Avram Grant, all that sort of thing coming up after this. I'm waving my pen in the air like I just don't care. Sean Inger wants to talk about United. Sean, I've got two questions for you. One of them is, could they go the whole season like this? Invincible. And two, Hernandez, he's flipping terrific, isn't he? Shouldn't they just pension off this Rooney fella and give, as scouts in Thailand suggesting, all his wages to Javier Hernandez?
I agree. Hernandez is great. Could they go the whole season like this? Possibly, but I think people forget the Invincible season.
Yeah.
At Christmas, Arsenal weren't top. United were top. They'd lost three games. Arsenal kicked on in the second half. So it's quite possible. The other thing that's fairly interesting is that Fergie was saying this week that United are stronger in the second half of the season. And I sort of looked back over the last 10 seasons, and it's sort of true. Six of the last 10 seasons, United have had accumulated more points in the second half of the season.
But only six of the last 10. Okay.
Only six of the last 10. So it's not as you know, I think we all think that United have this massive push, and on occasions they have done so. You know, right. I think famously in 2002-03, they only got 35 points first half of the season, they got 48 second half. Then they somehow got, you know, what took the league from Arsenal. But you know, it doesn't happen every year.
Okay. They played, of course, against Stoke. A couple of cracking goals, but in other senses, a workmanlike performance. One interesting thing about this, and people have mentioned, is we had a bit of a go at Sir Alex for recalling players that he'd loaned to Preston North End, but taking them back after that club fired his son, Darren. Danny Dorker amongst those saying, if his conduct is appalling and utterly shameless, then what about Tony Pulis? After Tony Pulis also recalled his midfielder Michael Tung from Preston straight after that. I wonder, it's not the first time Fergie's asked the Tung to be withdrawn by his fellow manager. After all, he has to sit down sometimes. But it is absolutely disturbing, this, isn't it? There's a kind of cabal of managers kind of ganging up on anyone who doesn't meet with the big fellow's pleasure.
Yeah, absolutely. I wasn't aware of what Pulis had done when we were discussing it on Monday. No, the only thing you could say is that these players probably aren't very good if they're playing for Preston week in, week out, and at the bottom of the Championship.
Danny Dorgo points out that Michael Tung scored against Cardiff City, his team, in the league, and it will probably do so again when they meet them in the Cup on Saturday. So he's a bit upset about that.
Preston North End are going to be okay anyway, because I understand that, according to our Preston North End supporting racing correspondent Tony Paley, Phil Brown is to be unveiled as their new manager.
All right.
Probably by the time this podcast goes to air.
Excellent. It's all go in the managerial merry-go-round, isn't it? Avram Grant, no relief for him, this time anyway. Hammered 5-0 at St. James's. Why, tactics guru Michael Cox, did he take that lucky scarf off? He had a lucky scarf. He said, this is my lucky scarf. This is why we are no longer being beaten. And yesterday, there he was in St. James's without the scarf.
Who started that? Was it Mancini, or was it because Mihailovic does it as well?
A lot of people have, especially in Italy, they're very superstitious. But Avram Grant was quite specific. He said back in Israel, he wore the same clothes for an entire winter, and his shirt got very smelly. So he said, I can't believe you didn't see the story. I'm only going with the scarf, and since I've pulled it out of the wardrobe, we haven't been beaten. I was shocked to see him on the sidelines without the scarf, and lo and behold, a 5-0 defeat. I don't know if we need to go into the details beyond that.
I think it's worth saying, I mean, it was a humiliating defeat against Newcastle, but taking the wider picture, the last five games, they've got two wins and two draws. So it would be a strange time to sack him now, I think.
Mm. All right. I have to say, with the West Ham, the impression is that nothing will earn Avram Grant the sack. But I might be wrong about that.
There was a rumour doing the rounds earlier, I'm not sure if I mentioned this before, that West Ham actually want to get relegated because it will enable them to get a load of expensive players off the wage bill.
Hmm.
Whether or not there's any truth to that, I have absolutely no idea.
All right, then. Newcastle, a lot of love for Leon Best, of course. But how about Joey Barton? Someone tweeting in today in that long list of tweets you gave me, Sean. It was Art Maguire saying, is he the best midfielder in England right now? Is he?
No, but he's played very, very well.
Is he the best English midfielder?
I think Wilshere could challenge you. I think.
Really?
Yeah, I think so. I think.
Does Wilshere play as big a part in Arsenal's success as Barton does at Newcastle?
Arguably not.
Okay.
I think all the best English players this season have been the ones that didn't go to the World Cup, haven't they? Leighton Baines, Andy Carroll, Jack Wilshere.
Is that because they didn't go to the World Cup, or is it just Capello completely ballsed up the selection? Or both?
I think probably not going to the World Cup helped.
Right.
And I think the pattern's the same with other players. I mean, Sami Nasri has said that not going to the World Cup has specifically helped him this season because he's been fresh for the first time in four seasons, I think.
All right. Managers under fire, anyway. Gerard Houllier. What's the story there, Sean?
They're going to stick with him for a bit longer.
Are they?
They are.
This just in?
Yep.
Okay. A 1-0 defeat at home to Sunderland, and that can happen because Sunderland are a very, very capable team, Barry, aren't they? Heading for European football.
I'm not convinced they will get to Europe. The sad thing about that result was Sunderland midfielder David Myler, who's just back from an anterior cruciate ligament injury. He came back ahead of schedule and he ended up being stretchered off last night with a cruciate ligament injury. So having been just out for 6 months, he's probably going to be out for another 8 to 10, who knows. That's very sad, because he's a young Irish lad trying to make his way. Sunderland are doing very well, probably benefiting from assorted other teams doing catastrophically badly. But they're good on their day, they could be awful on their day, and I wouldn't be confident they finish in the European places.
Brilliant goal from Phil Bartley, an equally brilliant miss from Emil Heskey. Really comforting to see him putting that one in, or indeed not.
That summed up his career, didn't it? Because against Chelsea on Sunday, he was fantastic. I thought he led the line, winning challenges in the air, scored a good goal, and then he missed an open goal and then got sent off as well yesterday.
Yeah. Julia's only had two wins since being appointed in September. He now has his Aston Villa team back in the relegation zone. We did get a bit of flack for suggesting that Villa might go down. But anyway, but that's where they sit. Plenty of action going on across Europe, in Spain, Copa del Rey. In Italy, Serie A starts up again today, Thursday. Can't really bring you any details on that because the games are yet to be played. But Leonardo making his debut.
There's a latest in the Adrian Mutu developments as well.
He's mad. He's mad, isn't he?
Should we chat about that?
Yeah, tell us about it. You can explain to me what is going on in his head.
Well, apparently he walked out of a training session yesterday.
He was all suited up, ready to go, and he got a phone call from his agent, spoke in a whisper, and then turned around, walked out, and has not come back.
And Fiorentina have now said they are going to sue him, or they're going to start some kind of legal proceedings against him, which seems, I know he's had his problems before, but it seems a bit harsh considering he just walked out of a training session.
No, he didn't just walk out. He just walked out and said, I'm not coming back. Basically, his contract is up this summer. Mm-hmm. And he wanted a move to either Cesena or Bologna, who troubled Fiorentina, are playing this weekend. And the club said, listen, we will let you go in Italy to an Italian club, but only if an Italian club pays some money. Otherwise, you can go on a Bosman to, right now. So you have to wait to the end of the season if it's going to be in Italy, but otherwise, unless they pay us some money. Otherwise, you can go right now abroad if that's what you really want. And he and his agent decided that what they wanted to do was go to Cesena. And they weren't going to pay any money for it. And when he heard on this phone call, apparently, his agent saying, no, the club aren't going for that, he said, well, that's it then. And he just left off his own bat, didn't say anything to anyone. So, yeah, they don't want to rescind his contract because that's kind of what he wants anyway. They just want to reduce his wages. But you just have to wonder, this is a club that's stuck by him when he beat up a waiter, when he got done for this, when he got done for the other. And I still would like to know what happened when he met up with Chelsea's lawyers in Miami, his kind of town, I have to say, to discuss the 17 million euros that he owes them. What the verdict on that was, because no word has filtered out.
Well, I heard that all his assets are very conveniently belong to his wife.
Yeah.
And therefore Chelsea can't lay claim to them, which he just has to keep. Mrs. Mutu's suite, which he hasn't always done in the past, by all accounts.
Well, in other European news, interesting to see Uli Hoeneß coming out against Sepp Blatter. Did you see this? saying that it was time for the major football federation to say enough is enough, that they have made our game a laughingstock, says Hoene, speaking of Blatter and his FIFA cronies. His words, perhaps. They may not have been, actually. I mean, after all the post-Qatar awarding business the other day, after all the talk that there might be a move away from FIFA, it's interesting to see somebody actually coming out in the open with that.
On the subject of Qatar, worth mentioning that the Asian Cup starts, I think, tomorrow, which is in Qatar.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know until I was looking up yesterday that it was actually due to be played in the summer months, and they switched it to January because it was too hot to play in July.
In Qatar, really?
Yeah. So, I mean, I thought that this...
What kind of temperatures do they get there in July?
I'm not sure. We'll have to listen to the podcast from a few weeks ago.
But don't they have unbelievably air-conditioned stadiums?
Right. It makes you wonder why they gave it to them in the first place, really. Surely some kind of weather report could have been prepared. I hope this isn't going to be a problem for 2022, Michael.
Let's hope not. But I thought that FIFA only just realised after they gave it to Qatar that this would be an issue. But this tournament has been switched, so they must have had it in their minds before giving it that this would be a possibility to switch the World Cup.
Do you think?
Well.
And maybe there was some other reason they chose Qatar then.
Quite possibly. Who knows?
Well, I don't know. We're in the realms of hypothesis now, aren't we?
If you actually go to zonalmarking.net, there's a page there with a picture of the sun and a big arrow pointing down into a stadium on a map of Qatar and little dots, and it's very informative, as are all the diagrams on zonalmarking.net.
I like the pictures. I have to say, putting pictures in, that's the best thing you can do on a tactics
Convenient
website.
Speaking of pictures, Jimbo, you were on ESPN.
It's not me that got small, it's the pictures that got big. No, wait, that's not right. But yes, ESPN, I was,
doing
it's
an
true.
Italian half-season roundup.
Yeah, absolutely.
And World filters through, you're going to be presenting on BBC South.
That's correct.
Tell us more.
Do you want to know more?
Yeah.
Tell you what, listeners in across three regions of the BBC's output, that's BBC South, BBC South West and BBC West, will be able to catch me Monday week on Late Kickoff, the BBC's Football League, a regional football league.
Your specialist subject.
Pretty much, yeah.
And with Matt Letizia tied up by Sky, presumably...
Not literally, of course.
Francis Benali will be your sidekick.
No.
Glenn Cotterill.
What?
Glenn Cotterill.
Guess again, Sean Ingle. It's Graham Murty and Leroy Rossini. Oh. Yes.
Alan Partridge, George.
All right. Well, you know, we've all got to have ambitions. The SPL, how about that 10-team league business? There I was joshing about this. But in all seriousness, shadow-pressing Kenny posts in saying, how about Tuesday's consensus among SPL chiefs that the division should change back to a 10-team format? This is basically for financial reasons. They're not getting enough money to share around 14 clubs, so they figure, how about we just reduce it to 10, but have the same number of matches, so we'll get the same TV money. Anyway, Shadow Press and Kenny suggests that this is a complete disaster. If this was the chance of a generation, it appears we are a generation without hope. Have to say, it does seem to be more bad news, you know, one piece of bad news after another for Scottish football fans.
Yeah, it seems to have been an overwhelming reaction from fans against this. I haven't seen one comment piece or anything that says it's anything like a good idea.
Why would it be a disaster?
Because if we're already at the stage where we don't even mention the Old Firm game here on the podcast, as we didn't, in fact, on Tuesday, because... Flipping it, is it another Rangers-Celtic match? By the time the entire 10-team league is playing each other four times a season, everyone will have lost interest, surely.
I think Scottish football can be summed up by a comment I heard in the wake of the Old Firm derby, which I watched the first half last Sunday and before the will to live seeped out of me. And Georges Samaras scored both goals for Celtic in a two-goal win, and they were his first goals of the season. And after the game, Neil Lennon, I think it was, said, Georges Samaras is unplayable. I mean, that's just, you know, nonsense.
Right. Freddie Ljungberg similarly so.
Well, there you go, you know. It's sad, you know, we mock it all the time and make fun of it, but there are people who are genuinely interested in the SPL and love it, and it must be horrible for them to see it being flushed down the toilet.
Right. Just gently kind of withering.
Yeah.
All right. Posts. A lot of love to Chris Long there, still working on that Everton shirt. A lot of love for Michael Cox as well. The message boards were quite literally on fire with questions for you.
They were.
Overused cliche, question for Michael Cox. I'm a big fan of zonal marking. Do you do all the analysis yourself? It is the most comprehensive football tactics side I've come across. Why is television punditry so truly in the... Well, nasty word.
Well, it's quite difficult to make it work, I think, in television format.
Yeah.
or even maybe in podcast format. Who knows?
Possibly, yeah.
But when you can use chalkboards and you can use diagrams and you can embed videos, it's a lot easier.
Well, you can do all of that in TV.
That is true, yeah. Mm.
There's just not the will, is there? There's just not the time.
Possibly.
Perhaps.
Actually, did you see Match of the Day used a kind of almost a chalkboardy thing on their coverage at the weekend? It was showing.
Got that overhead shot of the stadium, is that the one you mean?
Yeah, and it showed where Torres had touched the ball and the average.
Well, I quite like that.
Yeah, I thought it was quite a good idea.
You can't have enough pictures to sell it to the thickies at the back like me.
I think that's fair, yeah.
Mm. All right, Mr. Gareth E., question for zonal marking Michael Cox. Who would win in a fight between you and Opta Joe? That's the question there, isn't it? Sean, you're a betting man.
I've been to Opta Studios. They're all very, very nice, very, very friendly, quite geeky.
And Joe?
I've not met with Joe. Joe's a fictional character.
No, don't, you're
not
say, meant to that. Say that. Don't ruin the magic. See, I think
Opta
Joe would win that
Oz
fight.
Oz steps from behind curtain moment.
I think Opta Joe would win the fight because Michael would be busy plotting his strategy and why he was, it'd be like the fight between in Raiders of the Lost Ark where the guy with the swords jumps out and waving them around,
right?
And then Opta Joe would just pull out his gun and
and also I steal all my stats from Opta Joe, so I think I'd just be waiting for them to make the first move, so,
right? Then you would use it jiu-jitsu style on them,
they power the chalkboards as well, of course, so.
Do they?
Yeah.
Which in turn powers zonal marking.
Exactly. So.
All right. It's all kind of like weird synergy. It's like Tony Pulis and Sir Alex Ferguson and that. Other posting news. Thanks for all these, by the way, listeners. Davis says, here's some Deep Dell Duck previous. We were talking about the Deep Dell Duck and why he was in trouble. If you look up the cup tie against Chelsea last year, you can see Deco having to nudge him out of the way to take a corner. Deep Dell Duck sometimes leans on the away keeper's goalpost during the game, mimics the warm-up exercises of the substitutes, and the other week against Hull City, he picked up the big furry Sky microphone behind the goal and held it into the crowd as we sang. So that's why he's been basically ushered away from the premises by stewards.
That's excellent.
Up your arson, says Glenn Denning. Can I quickly ask? A couple of pods ago, you stirred up controversy by saying, why can't people who buy clubs do what they like, vis-a-vis the sacking of Sam Allardyce, when they have paid for clubs, etc.? Yet, earlier this season, you blasted MK Dons as being an absolute disgrace and that people shouldn't be able to do that sort of thing. But surely, this is just someone exercising that right which you have asserted is paramount. Wouldn't one of these views need rethinking? Take as long as you like, over.
Yes, Glenn Denning exposed as hypocrite sensation. That's a fair cop.
Yeah. Okay, then.
Look, I forget everything I say. And normally I say things and I immediately disagree with them as soon as I hear them coming out of my mouth. So, you know, it's just football chats.
Yeah, come on, listeners.
It's worth drawing a distinction between sacking a manager and uprooting the whole club 100 miles away, though, to a certain extent.
They're both business decisions.
Yeah.
Mm. The FA Cup. Woof. Form books going out of the window. They'll treat it like a cup game for them. This is their cup final. Discuss some interesting fixtures for us. Man United, Liverpool. I think we've kind of touched on that already. No. Sir Alex promising he's going to take it seriously. Other interesting ties. Blackburn taking on QPR. Stevenage, Newcastle. Sunderland, meantime, are taking on Notts County.
That's not one of the pick. I mean, there's much better games than that.
Oh, go on then, Sean.
Well, I mean, I think Southampton, Blackpool's quite interesting. I think Millwall against Birmingham is reasonably interesting. And also Leicester.
You're still talking.
And Leicester City against Manchester City is arguably the pick.
Fair enough. Man City apart from the United against Liverpool. Sven's Leicester, as they're officially known. Leicester, as you know, Sean, sitting 12th in the Championship right now. But that's only 4 points off the playoffs. And they've had such a terrific time in the FA Cup over the years. They've been runners-up 4 times. That's a record for the most defeats without ever having won the competition. Sven against his old protege, Mancini.
It's interesting that, I mean, Leicester have got a really strong home record. They've been fairly poor away. I think City will go to Leicester late. They'll feel a strong side and they'll be very tough to beat. But I'm really looking forward to the game.
And it's both managers against their former clubs as well, because Mancini had a 4-game spell with Leicester.
He did.
Between leaving Lazio as Sven's assistant and then taking over as Fiorentina manager.
Right.
And while there, he became friends with Robbie Savage, which seems one of the more unlikely friendships you might.
Hmm.
Have you spoken to Mancini about his Leicester?
I suppose him briefly on that topic after he returned to take over as Fiorentina manager, which was why he kind of curtailed his whole Fox experience. And he seemed to regard it as a tremendously rewarding and enriching experience. He's always been a huge fan of English football, and I think felt that it was a way for him to get in touch with what he regarded as the real game. You know, because in Italy they're very big on the fact that it all originated back in England, and that's where the real game still resides in spirit, and very much in places like Walker Stadium. Anyway, there you go. So
there's a tie there between Torquay and Carlisle. Is that about as far apart as two teams could possibly be in the FA Cup?
I think so.
Geographically, I mean.
I think it's the second longest away trip of the season from fixtures that are actually happening. I believe the longest was Exeter versus Darlington, I think, which was about 15 miles longer.
You checked?
I did. I spent
that's
like
beautiful.
I spent 20 minutes on Google Maps.
Finder.
Google Maps.
And how do? You kind of click on both places and it'll give you a...
Yeah, that's distance by road rather than as the crow flies.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah,
but that's a huge
important
trip. I think it took 5 hours 58 minutes by car.
Right.
One I remember way. Before Plymouth drew Newcastle in the FA Cup, I think it was last season, mm-hmm. actually, and myself and James Dart got in the AA route finder to see how far it was, because it was a midweek replay, and Plymouth brought quite a lot of fans, and I think got tonked 3-0. Game over after about 20 minutes. That must be soul-destroying.
Speaking of James Dart, it's probably worth mentioning, after his baby being born the other day, Paolo Bandini's getting married in Vegas.
Good Lord, listeners.
With a Billy Joe impersonator from right. Green Day, doing the ceremony.
They have a Billy Joe impersonator. Why, is he a big Green Day fan, Paolo Bandini?
I see, apparently it's his wife's idea. I mean, he's getting married at Stratford Town Hall, but then they're flying immediately to Vegas and having a proper ceremony out there.
Rock
he
and
sent
roll.
An email out inviting us all. It's in like a month.
Must be in with that Christmas party one that I didn't get. Listeners.
Well, I priced it up yesterday. It's going, I reckon, get to Vegas, return trip to Vegas and right. Say 4 nights accommodation. It's going to be about $1,000.
Right. But you can make that back.
On the roulette table.
Yeah.
No, I've been in Vegas before.
Right.
I got a free trip to Vegas. Oh. All expenses paid, taxis, hotel, airfare, the works, food, everything.
Right.
And it still cost me £2,500.
Right. Did they get the World Cup after that or not?
No.
All right. Well, anyway, moving along on the FA Cup front, you didn't mention, Sean, Arsenal Leeds. Hey, Leeds, the team that put Man United out last season. Jermaine Beckford gone now, but they've got that Luciano Becchio fellow, the Argentine. Did you know no team in the Football League has scored more goals than Leeds this season? 46 in 26 matches, almost as impressive as the 43 they've conceded. Wow, they sound like fun. Imagine them going toe-to-toe with Arsenal.
I'm going to say, you're obviously, they are one of these teams that they do go for it. They do leave themselves open, they're quite exciting to watch.
Right, form book out the window, I see.
Do you?
It'll be like a cup final for them.
Potential banana skin.
Yeah, absolutely.
Arsenal rarely lose to lower league teams, and I think they'll...
They're due for a run in the FA Cup, though, Arsenal. They haven't got past the fifth round in the last 5 seasons.
Right.
Compare that to the previous 5 seasons, they got to the semi-final at least every time.
It is interesting.
And also, I saw a survey of Arsenal, either Arsenal members or season ticket holders, where they were surveyed about everything to do with the club, from ticket prices, as we've mentioned, to the style of football, to Wenger's management. And I think the biggest grievance they had with Wenger was fielding weakened sides in the FA Cup. So I wonder if he's played a stronger team in the Carling Cup so far this season. I wonder what kind of team he'll put out on.
He's
on
the
Sunday.
Kind of man to take a lot of notice of surveys, I imagine.
Well, I think he's got a good relationship with the Arsenal fans. I think he understands they've been reasonably patient the last 5 years. So I think he maybe does pay more attention to the supporters than other managers might.
All right.
Are
excellent.
You suggesting he wouldn't do well on Family Fortune?
He wouldn't want the money, though, would he?
He wouldn't want the money. He'd also have great problems. I don't know what Family Fortunes is.
Our survey said.
Yeah. No, that'd be, does he have to see anything?
If Vernon Kay goes over to Strictly Come Dancing, as people say, will replace... Yeah.
Now, this is the kind of transfer talk we should have had.
If Vernon Kay goes over to Strictly Come Dancing and replaces Bruce Forsyth,
yes,
there'll be a vacancy...
Celebrities, Family Fortunes.
There'll be a vacancy on both shows, one might say. Yeah, but anyway...
You might get the nod after your... Like, you've got previous in-game show...
That's true, I have actually.
Cal Vorderman.
All right, well, I'm too busy with regional TV right now, Sean. I'll let you know if something, if I get a window further on down the line. Anyway, Thanks so much, listeners, for being part of this rip-roaring Football Weekly Extra. My thanks as well to Michael Cox.
Thank you, James.
To Sean Ingle.
Thanks.
And to Barry Glendinning. And happy holidays, Barry.
Thanks.
That's it for now. We'll be back after the weekend with fresh news on all the exciting themes discussed over the last 40 minutes. Also, hopefully you'll be joining us for that. Quick mention for the fact that I've got a European paper review coming up shortly. Yes, it's back after its Christmas sabbatical. So do have a look at that if you're of that inclination. But otherwise, we'll speak to you on Monday and have a lovely weekend.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.